This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frias, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about go-to-market in calendar weeks 20 and 21. Frias is a B2B market research partner helping ICT and tech providers identify niche channel partners by compressing the full journey from identification to qualified first meeting into 4 to 5 weeks. You can find more info in the description.
So if you're joining us today, we are taking a look at the top go-to-market trends seen across LinkedIn.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we really wanted to cut through the fluff of calendar weeks 20 and 21.
Oh, there's so much fluff out there right now.
Right. So we're just extracting what is actually moving the needle in strategic B2B marketing today.
I mean, we're talking everything from AI agents moving into real production all the way to this this massive simplification of tech stacks.
Which is huge. And speaking of AI agents, that's really our first big cluster of insights. Agentic GTM is moving into production, and it is absolutely demanding governance.
It really is. It's not just a sandbox experiment anymore.
No, not at all. Sarah Soleimani had a great post about this. She built a voice-activated pre-call sales assistant.
Oh, wow. How did she put that together?
So she used an MCP, Claude, Gmail, and Google Drive. Basically, the agent reads recent emails and docs, synthesizes them, and just speaks a briefing memo to the rep before a call.
That sounds incredibly useful.
It is. But, you know, she was very honest about the trade-offs, which I appreciate. She pointed out that using MCPs causes massive token bloat.
Right, because you're just feeding it so much raw background text.
Exactly. And that leads to context window degradation. The AI basically just forgets the main instructions because the conversation history gets too long.
Which is a real problem when you're dealing with actual revenue, right?
Oh, it gets worse. Sergey Grizzly posted about a $40,000 lesson his team learned with governance.
Wait, 40,000? What happened?
Yeah, so his team deployed 3 AI agents. The first 2 failed spectacularly.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the first one actually hallucinated a competitor product launch and just spammed their internal Slack with panic alerts.
That is the stuff of nightmares for a marketing director. Hmm. I mean, people must have been freaking out.
Totally. And the second one churned out 47 completely generic blog posts in, like, a weekend.
So just useless noise. Did the third one work?
It did, but only because they implemented pause points before execution.
So a human-in-the-loop system.
Right. The system physically couldn't publish a post or send an email without a human clicking approve.
That makes total sense. And it really aligns with what Kevin Payne was saying.
Oh, yeah. What was his take?
He argued that operators need to stop debugging prompts, and instead, they need to start managing AI agents like junior employees.
That is such a good shift in perspective.
It is, because, you know, it's like we've been treating AI like this magical vending machine where we just tweak the buttons.
Right, just change an adjective in the prompt and hope it works.
Exactly. But Kevin says we need to treat it like an eager junior intern. They need a strict job description, product requirements, documents, scope contracts, and even sprint reviews.
Wow, sprint reviews for an AI.
Yeah, a manager has to sign off on their work. You can't just let them run wild in your CRM.
Which actually makes me wonder about forecasting. If we have these AI interns touching everything, how does that impact the revenue forecasting process?
Well, Saranya Roy had a brilliant insight on this. She said that AI agents won't fix your forecast. They will expose it.
Expose it? What does she mean by that?
Think about it. Every call transcript, every micro change in a CRM field is now logged data. It completely eliminates those fuzzy hiding spots reps used to use.
Oh, like sandbagging a deal.
Exactly. Or relying on a gut feeling. Saranya points out this demands a whole new layer of revenue truth.
Revenue truth. I like that term.
Right. Hmm. Because even with all this data, you still need human sign-off.
Yeah.
The AI exposes the reality, but a human has to own it.
That makes perfect sense. And, you know, managing these highly governed AI agents is so technical now, it's actually creating a completely new role in the B2B marketing org chart.
Yes, GTM engineering. That is becoming a core operating model.
Exactly. Neeraj Kumar pointed out that there are over 100 GTM engineer roles open right now.
That's massive. It's a totally new title.
It is, because there's this huge infrastructure gap. You've got Salesforce for sales, HubSpot for marketing, Gong for calls, and nobody owns the mess in the middle.
Right. The data is just siloed.
Exactly. But Neeraj says one GTM engineer connecting these systems with AI can cover the manual work of like 5 to 6 SDRs.
Wow. 5 to 6 SDRs. That's a huge efficiency gain.
It really is.
But, you know, Rachel Roundy made a great point about this. She said the GTM engineer isn't just a rebranded marketing ops title.
It's not. How is it different?
She says it sits at the exact intersection of marketing strategy, operations, and AI. It's a reflection of a much more technical reality.
That's a rare skill set. You have to understand the tech and the go-to-market strategy.
Exactly. And Adam Schoenfeld echoed this. He said AI is actively breaking the traditional go-to-market org structure.
Breaking it how? Like getting rid of teams.
Kind of. It's reducing the need for middle managers who just coordinate between silos. It's paving the way for these high-impact ICs, or individual contributors, who can own projects from end to end.
Okay, but let me push back on that for a second.
Sure, go ahead.
Does this mean the traditional marketer is just obsolete? Or does this just mean that the marketing team of 2026 needs to look a lot more like a software engineering team?
I think it's definitely the latter. You have to have that engineering mindset now.
Which brings us perfectly into our third cluster, because the first thing these engineers do isn't adding more tools, it's ripping them out.
Yes, GTM stack simplification has become a massive strategic priority.
Huge. Anisfit Lipna posted that in 2026, having 10 plus tools in your stack is a massive red flag.
Oh, absolutely. A few years ago it was a flex, now it's just bloat.
Exactly. She says the new flex is a clean one tool per job stack. She mentioned tools like Granola for notes, Clue for competitors, and Adio for pipeline. Just simple and focused.
And we're seeing this at the enterprise level too. Jordan Brown shared an incredible example from Autodesk.
Oh, the Autodesk story was wild.
Right. They simplified a tangled web of over 50 sales apps down to under 20.
50 down to 20. That's a huge cut.
Yeah. And they did it all on a unified Salesforce backbone in less than a year.
That change management alone must have been intense. But Tim Rutten, the CMO at Backbase, led an even more extreme exercise. Wrecker Cats shared this one.
Oh, I saw that. The delete and rebuild approach?
Yes. They started from absolute zero. They completely ignored sunk costs.
Which is so hard for leadership to do.
It is, but the results were undeniable. 60% bigger deals, 85% pipeline growth, and a 25% smaller budget.
That is just staggering. A smaller budget, but way bigger deals.
Right. But it raises a question. Most companies are terrified of deleting their legacy CRM because of the sunk cost fallacy. It's like hoarding old cables in a drawer just in case you need them.
Oh, we all have that drawer.
We do. So how do teams overcome the fear of just throwing the drawer out?
I think it comes down to realizing that the bloated stack is actually hiding your best targets. Which leads us to the fourth cluster. Outbound GTM is being totally rebuilt around intelligence.
Right, because once the stack is clean, outbound stops being a volume game.
Exactly. It becomes an intelligence game. Shawshank Chandrasekaran shared a brilliant method for this.
Yeah, the scraping workflow.
Right. So instead of an SDR just looking at a stale LinkedIn one-liner, he uses tools like Spider and Firecrawl paired with Claude.
And what exactly is he pulling with that?
He pulls live competitor messaging, pricing, and fresh news signals. And he does this for 5,000 target accounts for under $5.
Wait, 5,000 accounts for $5?
Yes. The cost of that level of intelligence has basically dropped to zero.
That is incredible. And, you know, Kyle Poyar and Dan Rosenthal talked about this in their 7-step modern ABM guide.
Oh, yeah. What do they focus on?
They emphasize that differentiation now only comes from deep context around a small set of high-value accounts. You really have to leverage first-party intent signals.
Which totally aligns with Ravanth Ruman's concept. He calls it the community funnel system.
Right, the community qualified leads, or CQLs.
Exactly. Because buyers are leaving these massive intent signals on Reddit, G2, and developer forums way before they ever fill out a form on your site.
They're essentially telling you their problems in public.
Right. And Riven says the goal is to listen and prioritize, not just screep and spam.
But let me challenge that approach for a second.
Okay, what's the concern?
We have all this amazing signal data, right? But are we just overwhelming our sales reps? Like, how do we ensure this intelligence actually makes it into the buyer's hands at the right time without seeming, well, creepy?
That is the exact danger here. If you just hand a rep a spreadsheet of Reddit usernames, they're going to send a terrible email.
Exactly. Hey, I saw you complaining on a forum.
Right. Instant turnoff. And that actually brings us to our final theme. Buyer journey alignment and commercial discipline.
Because all this tech is useless if it doesn't align with how a human actually buys.
Exactly. Jamie Walsh provided a great framework for this. He said that buyers don't move through funnels. They move through questions.
They move through questions. I love how simple that is.
Yeah, he laid out 10 real buyer questions across awareness, consideration, decision, and advocacy.
What kind of questions?
Things like, is this problem actually worth fixing right now? Or can I defend this purchase to my CFO? If your go-to-market content doesn't answer those specific questions, it's just noise.
That makes total sense. And Akshat Srivastava made a really interesting point related to this. He said early stage GTM teams miss a lot of this intelligence because of broken incentive structure.
Broken incentives? How so?
Well, sales reps are financially incentivized to just keep moving forward, right? Close the deal, move to the next demo.
Right, hit the quota.
Exactly. But by doing that, they completely ignore the goldmine of data hidden in lost prospects and churned customers.
Oh, because they've moved on.
Yeah. And Akshat said something I love. He said, churned customers have nothing to be polite about.
Oh, that is so true. They will give you the brutal, honest truth.
Exactly. And if you don't collect that truth, you're missing the exact language you need to answer those buyer questions Jamie Walsh was talking about.
Which ties perfectly into Senge Zulu Sarak's warning. He said that renewal risk is a go-to-market design problem, not a customer success problem.
Wow. So it starts way earlier than we think.
Yes. It is set at the deal stage. It all depends on how the product was positioned and whether adoption was designed into the initial motion.
So if a rep overpromises just to close a deal,
then customer success inherits a ticking time bomb. You can't fix bad positioning 12 months later at renewal time.
That is a harsh reality check for a lot of sales leaders out there.
Definitely. It requires massive commercial discipline.
Well, before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave the listener something to ponder on their own. This is based on a really wild post from Deepika Sharma.
Oh, the Anthropic experiment.
Yes. Anthropic recently ran a live experiment where AI agents negotiated and closed 186 real deals.
Wait, real business deals?
Real deals, and there were zero human touch points.
That is insane.
Right. Forrester is actually predicting that 90% of B2B buying will be AI agent intermediated by 2028.
Wow.
So here's the thought for you as you're listening today. What happens to your perfectly engineered go-to-market strategy when your buyer is no longer a human, but an AI agent negotiating with your AI agent?
That changes everything.
Are your cloud marketplaces and co-sell workflows actually ready for non-human procurement? It's something we all need to start thinking about.
Absolutely. Well, if you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, field marketing, channel marketing, MarTech, social selling, and AI in B2B marketing.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next time.